This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Day 45 of the Israeli war in Gaza, some 13,000 Palestinians have been killed in relentless attacks on the besieged territory. In retaliation for Israeli crimes in Gaza, Hezbollah hits Israeli military positions, including a command base inside of the occupied territories. And Hamas praises the recent seizure of an Israeli vessel by the Yemeni Navy as a victory for Palestinians. Hello and welcome to World News. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Israel is bombing and killing more Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. This on day 45 of the regime's deadly onslaught on the territory. The regime bombed the Indonesian hospital in northern Gaza in one of its latest attacks, killing at least 15 people. Israeli strikes also killed dozens of others in Nusrat and Al-Baraj refugee camps in central Gaza Strip and in eastern Rafah. The regime has been bombing hospitals, schools, and residential buildings indiscriminately. These include Saturday's strike on the UN-run Fakhura School and the Al-Shafa Hospital. The bombing campaign has so far killed more than 13,000 Palestinians, most of them women and children. Many also remain missing, possibly still under rubble of bombed-out buildings. People are witnessing the unending cycle of bloodshed in Gaza are critical of inaction by some Arab countries.
This is a war crime against the Palestinian people. The Arab and Islamic world, as well as the European countries, are watching us being slaughtered. We were left alone with only God to help us.
Reports coming from Gaza paint a grim picture of the situation of health facilities there. Israeli warplanes have also launched a violent attack on the vicinity of the European Gaza hospital. 25 hospitals and 52 other health facilities have stopped working because of incessant Israeli bombings, as well as the lack of fuel, equipment, and medicine. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it has hit Israeli military outposts in the northern parts of the occupied territories. Hezbollah says it has struck the Baranet base, which is the headquarters of Israel's 91st Division, with heavy caliber Burkan rockets. The attacks have left casualties among Israeli forces. 25 other launches were reported from Lebanon in the occupied territories on Monday. And the resistance movement says attacks against Israel will continue until it stops its war crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. Now, the area along Lebanon's southern border has been witnessing exchanges of fire between Hezbollah and Israel since October the 8th, the day after Palestinian resistance forces launched Operation Al-Aqsa Flood against Israel. A senior official of the Hamas resistance movement has hailed the seizure of an Israeli ship by the Yemeni army as a victory for Palestinians. Now, the head of the Hamas political bureau overseas, Sami Abu Zuhri, called the recent seizure of the Galaxy Leader in the Red Sea a great achievement by the Yemeni army. He added that the move should set an example for all Islamic countries in the face of the U.S. and Israeli atrocities. Abu Zuhri stressed that Washington and Tel Aviv should pay the price for their crimes in Gaza. Earlier on Sunday, Ansarullah warned that it would target all ships associated with Israel in regional waters. Ansarullah has recently launched a volley of missiles and drones at Israeli targets in response to its onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Well, Iran says resistance groups will end their reactions to the Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip only after the regime stops its atrocities against Palestinians. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said in his weekly presser that resistance groups have time and again warned of the consequences of if Israel does not halt its crimes against Palestinians. Nasser Kanani said, however, that resistance groups act independently and are not commanded by Iran. He rejected accusations that Iran operates proxies in the region. He said such accusations are rooted in Israel's attempts to find an excuse for a strategic defeat by a Palestinian group. A spokesman also touched on the broad global opposition to the war on Gaza. He said this shows the global anger about the war and the unconditional support Israel is getting from the U.S. The Iranian president has called for a unified stance and concerted effort to pressure the Israeli regime to halt its bloodshed in the war-ridden Gaza Strip. Ebrahim Raisi made the call in a letter sent to the heads of 50 nations, including Russia, China, Turkey, and South Africa. In the letter, the Iranian president recommended the use of all available political and economic means to force the Israeli regime to stop its brutal onslaught of the defenseless and oppressed people of Gaza. He also slammed Western states' double standard and disregard for humanitarian and moral principles. Raisi had already demanded a complete Israeli withdrawal from Palestinian lands, a collective international embargo on the regime, and designating the Israeli military as a terrorist organization. Now, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has called for an immediate end to Israeli war crimes in Gaza. In a statement, Volker Turk described Israeli brutalities in Gaza as horrendous. He said the massacre of so many people and the displacement of hundreds of thousands of Gaza residents run counter to the principles of protecting civilians enshrined in international law. He said images taken in the aftermath of Israeli strikes on schools and hospitals are horrifying. The UN official also decried the regime for denying Palestinians access to humanitarian assistance. He reiterated that failure to comply with rules of international humanitarian law constitutes war crimes. Well, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has rejected as misleading and false the allegations that it is holding Israeli captives in the Al-Shifa hospital complex in Gaza City. Hamas said the Israeli regime is trying to cover up its military failure by leveling such allegations. It added that those claims are in line with the regime's campaign of lies and misinformation. The resistance movement noted that many of the injured captives were sent to Al-Shifa Hospital for treatment and then were returned to their places of detention. On Sunday, the Israeli military released videos showing Israeli captives being taken to Al-Shifa Hospital, claiming that Hamas is holding them inside of the medical complex. The claim is in line with the regime's accusation that Hamas's headquarters are located underneath Al-Shifa Hospital, which has been denied by the resistance group. Well, we're going to take a closer look at the events taking place. I mean, crossover. Like to welcome, first of all, Mariam Salib in Beirut and Saib Chef, author and Middle East expert out of Belfast. Starting it off with Mariam. Mariam, thanks so much for being with us. Fill us in on the situation that's taking place in the northern occupied territories in South Lebanon.
Northern occupied territories in Palestine are the ones that are being hit by the resistance operations from South Lebanon. Of course, Hezbollah has continuously hit their targets in the Israeli post. Today, it seems that there's bigger or heavier firepower being used by Hezbollah. We know that at least three Burkan rockets have been used against one post, which is considered a very significant post. It's considered not only barracks for the soldiers, it is the actual headquarters for the unit of the Israeli Army, Unit 91. As we were told, they had two different operations. First, at 8 a.m., the resistance fired two Burkan rockets, which are pretty heavy. We can see from the footage the damage that had that has been caused, and in this post specifically, we also had a 8:20 a.m. Beirut time, so just 20 minutes difference. Hezbollah launched another Burkan rocket that was extremely heavy on the Israelis, and we can see from the reaction of the Israeli media, the military leadership, as well as the political leadership, they are frustrated, they are infuriated with the fact that Hezbollah have been capable of destroying this entire headquarters. And of course, you can see the damage that has been caused to this place specifically. And as a result, of course, the Israelis, despite the fact that they had been, even in the past 2 days, randomly shelling Lebanese towns all across the southern area, now we have even more also heavy artillery being used by the Israelis, mostly tank artillery, cannon fire, in addition to drone attacks, and also even fighter jets have been launching attacks and shelling against Lebanese civilian population, civilian houses. In addition to also, we have several touristic sites in the area of Marun, where we have a national park that was also under attack by the Israelis. We know that several fires in the diners over there in that area have erupted in that place. Now, thankfully, those areas have been evacuated by the Lebanese, so we do not have any human casualties. Of course, on the Syria, on the Israeli side, it's very difficult to see and know exactly the human casualties. But when it comes to the destruction caused by Hezbollah's Burkan rockets, it's extremely heavy. And that is in addition to the fact that we have other operations that were conducted against other posts. We had a place, one of the areas where a gathering of soldiers as well was targeted. It seems that Hezbollah has been able to get some hefty catches from the Israelis. There have been several areas, although the resistance has been targeting the gatherings of soldiers, but they still seem to gather in open areas. So this has been very significant for the resistance to be able to target them. And it seems that those fighters have orders to target any movement for the Israeli soldiers, whether they are in vehicles, even in civilian vehicles, and they know that this is military that is moving in that car. And as we know, that area and all of the northern region, modern occupied Palestine, has transformed into a military zone. We don't have any civilians in that area or Israeli settlements. What we do have is always movement of soldiers, even if they are in civilian houses or civilian cars, or even dressed as civilians, they are actually military personnel. And this is why they are being targeted by Hezbollah, and that is in addition to Hezbollah's targeting of the post and its devices. So this is also inflicting heavy price. This is making Israelis pay a heavy price, not only with the human casualties, but also with their equipment and their capabilities. It's costing them, of course, a very heavy price on a daily basis.
Well, Saab, you heard our correspondent, Mariam Saleh, talking about the situation that was taking place in the northern occupied territories. Let's talk about the situation in general inside of the Zionist regime or territories, because we know whether we're talking about from the south or the north, there's definitely not a feeling of security inside of this regime any longer. And just in general, throughout this entity, I want to talk about the lack of peace of mind on that side of the spectrum for the settlers and others now.
Good question. If you notice, in 1956, of course, after the British and the Americans installed the gangs, the Zionist gang on Palestine, which the British came under the mandate, the United Nation, which is at the time the League of Nations mandate for the British, which after that, of course, they handed it to the Zionist entity. Since then, we know the forces who were establishing from the Zionist gangs. They were very well equipped from the West. They were battle hardened during the Second World War with the British and the Americans. And over the numbers and figures, the over 250,000 battle hardened gangs. Yeah. And supported by airplanes and tanks, artilleries, and all of that, against the civilians of Palestine who didn't have an entity. They were just captured from the Ottoman Empire at the time, who didn't allow the Palestinians to arm themselves. And some support came supposed to be from Arabic countries who wanted to help the Palestinians. And these Arabic countries were themselves under the British colonial occupation. So the picture was just a smokescreen to install the Zionist entity. In 1956, when the Nasser revolutionary president of Egypt nationalized the Suez Canal, the British and the French with the Zionist entity went to invade Egypt. So the Zionist entity never, ever in their history fought alone or they created the image as they are the formidable force from that time till 1967, when they defeated the Arabic official regimes in Egypt and in Jordan and in Syria in a sudden attack. And in less than 6 days, they took the territory which is more than 10,000 times of Gaza Strip, which is including Gaza, Sinai, the West Bank, the Golan Heights, and the rest. So today, and at that war, battle itself, 1967, there's a lot of evidence today available to show anybody who's interested in the research of that. It's the United States of America airstrikes of Egypt who fulfilled this, which means they created this story about amazing military formidable force, the Zionist entity, efficient. It's fought with the United States of America's all armed, all intelligence, all airplanes, and 1973 war as well on with 6 October, which the Arabs they managed to direct a blow, a massive blow to the Zionist entity. Came airlifts of all from the American military complex to support the Zionist entity and to shore it up. And today we see the same thing. Today even more in the battle and their genocide committed against Gaza. You see the armada, the Western armada in front of the shores of Gaza and Lebanon. You see the American airplanes carriers. You see the French helicopters carriers. You see a lot of from Germany, Britain, France, and the rest coming, all of that gathering at Gaza and to intimidate the area and the region. That all because their function state, the Zionist entity, was shaken in the hands of nearly 1,000 freedom fighters, shook that image of that formidable force. Undefeatable army is shaken by 1,000 Palestinian freedom fighters, and the whole Western entities, the United States of America's the arrogance of the empire in there, came and to shore up the Zionist entity and help them in committing up till now over 1,330 massacres committed against Gaza and its families. From that, nearly we're talking about 5,500 children, around 4,000 women, and coming today this morning, they attacked and targeted a home in Khan Yunis city, killing most of the family and extended family.
Well, unfortunately, Saeb, sorry, but we're out of time. I appreciate you being with us, Mariam Saleb, out of Beirut, and Saeb Shath, author and Middle East expert. Out of Belfast. And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Since October 7th, the Zionist regime's police forces have barred most Palestinians from attending Friday prayers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, scenes of worshippers being prevented by Israeli regime forces from praying at Al-Quds, Al-Aqsa Mosque, have become commonplace since October 7th. The holiest Muslim site in Palestine usually draws tens of thousands of faithful for prayers every Friday, but seemingly arbitrary restrictions on who can enter the compound mean protests regularly erupt at the site as worshippers are refused entry. Over the past few weeks, the Zionist regime troops have fired tear gas on Palestinians attempting to pray in the streets surrounding Al-Aqsa and attacked some journalists covering the events. Mohammad Salamia, an 18-year-old man who has not been able to pray at Al-Aqsa since the beginning of the war, said, "They don't let us in, oppress us and hit us." Jihad Taha 47, who was also barred from going in Friday prayers, said the restrictions are part of a wider campaign against the Palestinian residents of Al-Quds. He said, "The goal is to put pressure on residents of the old city in general and the residents of Al-Quds in general." While young men are more likely than others to be stopped, they have not been the only targets. Basima Zaidan, a 57-year-old woman who walked from Al-Quds neighborhood of Ras al-Amu to reach the mosque, said she was turned back by police officers after waiting for 30 minutes. She said he told her to go back, return to Ras al-Amud. The prayers, which usually see an average of 50,000 worshippers in and around the mosque, only had around 4,000 people recently. Mustafa Abu Su'ay, a member of the Islamic Waqf Council in Al-Quds, told Middle East Eye, "There are extremely tight restrictions to prevent the worshippers from coming in. There are not letting young people come in, for example, alongside people who are 80 years old sometimes, but it is very dependent on the individual police officer that has the authority." The Islamic Waqf, or Religious Endowment, is a Jordanian-appointed organization in charge of the control and management of Islamic sites in Al-Aqsa's religious compound. They have often spoken out against the Zionist regime's increasing pressure on the mosque and its surrounding area. Many Muslims fear that the Zionist regime will use the tumult of the ongoing war to implement a lasting change to who controls the holy site, which Jews refer to as the Temple Mount. Abu Su'ay worries the situation may be exploited to implement long-term restrictions on the compound, adding that the Waqf will never accept such circumstances. These restrictions on Muslim prayers in the Old City coincide with growing pressure on the Armenian quarter of Al-Quds. There, the Armenian Christian community claims to be facing an existential threat following a murky and secretive deal that could see some 25% of the quarter sold to the Zionist settler communities. Ever since the start of the current war in Gaza, the Zionist regime has placed heavy restrictions on worshippers wishing to reach the Al-Aqsa compound, setting up many checkpoints and not allowing those who don't live in Al-Quds to enter. Increased violence has also been seen in the West Bank, with the Zionist settler and army attacks killing over 170 Palestinians, and in East Al-Quds, where police forces tightened restrictions on the movement of people. Despite the increasing restrictions at Al-Aqsa, many Palestinians, such as Zaidan, say they will keep trying to access their religious sites. For them, the site is just as much as a symbol of their struggle against the Zionist occupation, as it is a revered spiritual site. Zaidan said, "My soul is for Al-Aqsa. My blood is for Al-Aqsa." According to Anadolu Agency, for the consecutive weeks, Israeli regime authorities imposed tight restrictions on Palestinians, banning them from entering Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied East Al-Quds for Friday prayers, leaving the mosque all but empty. An official with Waqf department in Al-Quds told Anadolu that only around 4,000 Palestinians, most of them elderly, had managed to reach the venerated mosque to perform Friday prayers, down sharply from the usual 50,000. The official who asked not to be named added that the mosque appeared to be empty due to strict Israeli regime control of the streets. Eyewitnesses told Anadolu Agency that the Zionist regime forces have been heavily deployed across the occupied East Al-Quds, particularly in the Old City and the entrances leading to the mosque. Hundreds of Palestinians were forced to perform Friday prayers in the streets near the Old City after being barred from entering the mosque itself. The Zionist regime site gave no reasons for restricting Muslims' access to Al-Aqsa for prayers. Before the Zionist regime's restrictions, at least 50,000 Palestinians used to perform the Friday prayers in Al-Aqsa Mosque, particularly on the holy day of Friday. Tensions have been high across the West Bank and East Al-Quds since October 7th. More than 200 Palestinians have been killed by the Zionist regime forces in the West Bank and East Al-Quds since October 7th.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا O you who believe, اِسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
I want to draw some inspiration from a verse of the Quran as well tonight. And this is from verse number 13 of Surah number 45. And you might think, well, does the Quran speak about technology? Well, not directly. Allah doesn't speak about smartphones or the usage of technology per se, but we do have some indications in the Quran, as in this verse, about the power or the ability that God has given us. So he says in verse number 13 of Surah 45, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وَسَخَّرَ لَكُمْ مَا فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمَا فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا مِنْهُ Inna fi dhalika la ayatin li qawmin yatafakkarun. Allah says, it is He, Allah, who has made of service to you whatever is in the heavens and on the earth. All is from Allah, as a gift to His servants. Surely in this there are clear signs for a people who reflect. Allah is telling us, brothers and sisters, that all that you and I have on earth till today, and all that we will have until the 12th Imam comes, until the end of this world, is because Allah has made this earth and everything in it subservient. We have become the khulafa, the inheritors of this earth. We have become custodians over this earth. Allah has given us the ability, well, not us as Muslims, but He's given others the ability to travel to the moon, to go into outer space. Allah has given us the ability to create technology. The smartphone is something that, yes, somebody created in a factory, in a laboratory, came up, engineers designed it, they physically made it. But this is all because Allah has given us the ability. Human beings have got this aql, this intellect, the mind, and we have been able to make it to this stage so far. You know, and if you and I think that what we have today is amazing, you should look into the hadith, because hadith tell us that what all of the prophets brought to humanity and what the first 11 imams gave us, all of the blessings from Adam up until the time of the 11th imam, hadith tell us this is equal to two letters of the alphabet. So it's a very small percentage of all of the knowledge that humanity has been given so far, and what we reach to up to the heavens, up to the planets, up to, you know, the farthest reaches of the universe and beyond, whatever we have is a very small, through a very small percentage of knowledge that Allah has bestowed upon us. But the hadith say when the 12th imam makes his return, and we know that it won't be easy in the beginning, there are a lot of uphill battles the imam will have to face. There will be wars, there will be famine, there will be, you know, chaos and destruction and mayhem for a time period. But then once things settle down, the imam establishes his government. The hadith say then the imam will complete our knowledge. He will complete all that we are yearning to have. You know, things that people are talking about today, the metaverse and, you know, all of these things, what we see in the movies about people being teleported from here to there. Maybe these things will become a reality. Maybe a day will come when we will have what is seen as science fiction will become fact. It will become a reality of the world that we will be experiencing. But let me just actually, before I go forward, let me just mention a hadith about this from our sixth imam, Imam Jafar ibn Muhammad al-Sadiq, alayhi salatu wassalam. This is not just a hadith I found, but this is a hadith I'm quoting from senior scholars who have mentioned this hadith in their works of the 12th Imam. And the hadith mentions this from the 6th Imam. He says, when our Qayyim rises up, meaning our 12th Imam, when he makes his duhur and the movement moves forward and it progresses towards his eventual success, the Imam says, Allah will enhance the audio-visual powers of our Shia in such a manner that the imam will talk to his Shia from the distance of 24 kilometers, as the hadith mentions, while they would be able to hear his voice and see him. And this will happen when the imam, while the imam remains where he is. Now you might say, well, we can do that today, right? We have phones, you can use FaceTime or WhatsApp or other apps to see somebody in another part of the world. What greatness is that? But the hadith doesn't say that we'll have a device in our hand. It says that the imam, the 12th imam, will enhance the audio and visual capabilities of the Shias. That we will be able to see and hear and interact with our imam, even though he's kilometers away from us, and maybe even more than the 24 mentioned in the hadith. So what we have today, brothers and sisters, with this technology is limited. Right? It is only as great as the Wi-Fi connectivity is, as powerful as the 5G or 6G signal is only as good as how long our battery life is on our device. But when the imam returns and he perfects our intellect and he perfects technology, we'll be at another level. And it'll be also at a time where we won't have all of this corruption to deal with, because he would have done away with all of the, you know, the corruption and all of the evil that comes from the uses of technology. But obviously we're a long way from that point. We're not there yet, right? We still have these phones and the apps that we have on it. And as believers, as the verse says, that Allah has given us the right to create this by making the entire world subservient to us. But the one point of the verse is that Allah gives all of this to us. It's understood from the verse as a gift. Right? This is all a blessing from Allah. And scholars tell us that the way that we show gratitude for a gift, the way we express our shukr to Allah, is to use the gift that God has given in the way that it was meant to be used. When I get a gift from somebody, right? Somebody comes and they give you a gift. Let's say they give you, you know, a dress shirt. If you were to use that shirt to wash your car with it and to wax your car, even though now it's your property, by the definition, you have not been grateful to that person for the gift, because the word shukr, within it means that you use that blessing in the way that it is meant to be used. If you wear that shirt, then you've been thankful to that individual. You've expressed your gratitude to them. So when Allah gives us the power of sight, the power of hearing, the power of the intellect, and then we use it against His rules, when we break the rules of Allah, when we commit sin with these blessings He has given us, then by definition we are not being grateful to Allah for what He has given. And if we're not grateful, then Allah has every right to do what He wishes with us. And on the flip side, as Allah says, "La in shakartum la azidannakum." If you are grateful and thankful, I will increase you. "Wa in kafartum inna adhabi lashadid." But if you are ungrateful, if you are not using the blessings that God has given in the way that He expects, then He says that indeed my punishment is very severe. That chastisement can come at any time. It could be now in this world, and it may be in ways that we don't even recognize, because sometimes you and I think that punishment of God is just fire and brimstone, right? What happened to the nation of Prophet Lut, for example, or a flood comes and destroys, like at the time of Prophet Nuh, alayhi salam. No, don't think about punishments of God in our era in these ways. He won't send a storm of molten lava or fire from the skies to destroy us. No, but hadith do tell us that punishment of Allah can take place in different ways. For example, divisions within a community, when you have splits and fractures in a community, this can be perceived as being a punishment that Allah, not that Allah is giving, but through the law of cause and effect, through the sunnah of Allah, that He says when certain sins are done, there is an outcome, there is a result, and one of those results can be a separation within a community. So we recognize that punishments don't just mean instantaneous death and the wiping out of an entire community physically. No, it could mean the destruction of the unity of the community, of the ummah, of the believers, and even the followers of Abu Abdullah alayhi salatu wassalam.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
ولا تتفرقوا فيه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
كتاب
In the Limelight.
If you can't win them, fool them. This has been the flagship public relations strategy of the Zionist regime for decades, one that it has seemingly doubled down in the wake of the events of October 7th. However, this time around, the Zionist regime has overplayed its hand and has fumbled itself into walking back lies, deleting statesmen or simply ignoring calls to explain its brazen lies. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, the genocidal onslaught on the Gaza Strip has unmasked the Zionist colonial experiment, with over 12,000 dead already, more than half being women and children. The Zionist regime occupation has been subject to widespread condemnation and criticism worldwide. This is forcing the colonial settler regime to explain its actions as it conducts them, as public disgust from its main allies could threaten its image and its future. The West has always been the Zionist regime's number one supporter. The United States uses Israel as an outpost for its own imperialist initiatives in Western Asia and North Africa. In a sense, Tel Aviv regime acts as a 51st state, mirroring the inception of the first American colonies, a violent settler colonial formation that ethnically cleanses the indigenous population. For the illegitimate Zionist regime to continue existing, it must exert oppression not only over the Palestinians, but over any of its neighbors that insist on supporting the Palestinian cause. This brings up an inconvenience for the regime to survive. It needs American backing. It needs it in the form of financial aid, military aid, but most importantly, in the form of political support. The political backing in the form of congressional resolutions, statements, and calls for support can only be deemed legitimate to the public eye if the public approves of the actions of the Zionist regime. The Zionist regime does not need to convince the entire world that its horrific war crimes are legitimate. It only needs to convince a Western audience. Without this key ingredient, the Zionist entity loses the very little credibility it has, along with all financial and political backing. The sly propaganda campaign is often conducted subtly using photo shoots, exclusive photo opportunities for only Western media outlets, and broadcasting doctored images and false narratives on Western social media applications. So, on one front, we have the Zionist occupation manipulating reality to show themselves as humanitarians and moral to a Western audience. This is to justify their criminal onslaught of hospitals and other civilian populated areas. On the next front, we see the Zionist media blatantly lying, hoping no one questions them. The Zionist regime's military spokesperson Daniel Hagari posted a video of an Israeli troop inspecting what they claim is an area where hostages were being held within a hospital. The troop points to a chart on the wall that contains dates with some Arabic lettering. He then claims that the Arabic on the chart are the names of Hamas fighters, and that they use this chart to organize watchkeeping shifts over supposed hostages. As confirmed by hundreds of netizens, these are in fact the days of the week. What the Zionist regime troop is pointing to is not a chart of Hamas fighter shifts. It is a calendar. Unfortunately, this video was broadcast on various news networks like BBC, CNN, Fox News, and more. On the social media front, one may be able to find comments that question the validity of these claims or make corrections. On Western news media outlets, which do not question the Zionist officials, but rather act as stenographers for them, these claims are taken for fact without any investigation. Thousands to millions of people likely saw this footage and took this embarrassing, blatant lie as fact, simply because they do not know Arabic and were easily manipulated. Without any pushback from journalists, Zionist officials use Western media outlets as battering rams for their genocidal lines in attempts to normalize the brutal violence on the Palestinian people. Zionists rely on three major factors to maintain a hold over their Western audience: the ignorance of the audience, allowing them to manipulate reality freely; their status quo as U.S. allies, allowing them to present themselves as just; and lack of investigation, or perhaps willful omission of investigation, from Western media, who seemingly are the only ones who enjoy exclusive access to Israeli regime operations. However, people are catching up to these lies. Not only are netizens exposing the fraudulent statements from Zionist officials in real time, but independent organizations are also now stepping up to the plate to demand authentic evidence that is corroborated by on-the-ground Palestinian testimonials. Here, The Zionist regime is suffering embarrassingly. They are too used to being taken word by word. And now, they are scrambling multiple times. The occupation regime has deleted videos it claimed were concrete evidence of Hamas hospital operations when everyday people did their own investigation and concluded that the claims are based on staged photographs and fabrications. Even Western outlets, which seemingly act as spokespeople of their own on behalf of the Israeli regime, are being forced to report on the Zionist regime's walked-backed statements and deleted videos. Technological advancements and the ease of information transfer has stripped the occupation regime of the privilege of enjoying Western ignorance. Prior to these advancements, condemnation for the Zionist regime primarily existed within the so-called Global South. This time around, things have changed. The images and videos coming from Gaza have invoked sadness, disgust, and horror in the Western public sphere, which has typically stood by the Zionist regime for decades, often repeating Zionist lies as facts. Meanwhile, the Zionists can't conjure up a shred of truth to back up their brazenly false claims. It has reached a boiling point where, in the United States alone, hundreds of thousands are marching every weekend for Palestine. Activists are shutting down offices, weapons manufacturing plants, roads and bridges. Every lie exposed is serving as shovels worth of dirt in the grave of the colonial regime. The alternative? Israel shows its true face and leaves it up to humanity to decide. Either way, it loses.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sowing discord and conflict among Muslims is the enemy's trick to make Palestine ignored. January 19, 2014. It is in such conditions that the enemy is focusing all its efforts on making the Islamic Ummah forget about Palestine. How do they want to do this? They want to do this by creating discord, waging domestic wars, promoting deviant extremism in the name of Islam, religion, and Islamic Sharia. They want a group of people to say takfiri things against Muslims. The existence of these takfiri orientations, which have emerged in the world of Islam, is good news for arrogance and the enemies of the world of Islam. It is these takfiri orientations that attract the attention of Muslims towards insignificant issues instead of letting them pay attention to the truth about the existence of the malevolent Zionist regime. This is the exact opposite of what Islam wants. Islam has asked Muslims to be strong against the unbelievers but compassionate.